Il-program li ser tisimaw u għam iġi upli l-kombixu għatajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the program that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm very happy to have with me today in the studio four students. I have mostly academics on this program, so it's nice to have a change and to introduce Laura Muscat, Vivian Bayada, Tobias Ross and Jean-Paul Gatt. They are all from the Institute for European Studies here at the university, and they've come here today to talk to us about a very interesting exercise, an interesting event that they have attended recently, the SUNY EU Council Simulation for 2012. Welcome to the four of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So I think we'd better begin by stating really the aims of the event. I know this is not the first time it's happened, and not the first time that University of Malta has attended. Laura.
Well, this is my second time. I attended the simulation last year in New York, and this year I said, well, I have to find another team. It was quite interesting. So basically, this is an international transatlantic program between the US and Europe, basically. It's organized by the SUNY NewPALT, and the aim is to attract universities from the US and from Europe. It's a new council simulation, so there's this interesting and curiosity behind, mostly behind American students, to know the dynamics of how the European Union works, having 27 different countries, how they agree, especially now having all this financial crisis going on, the intervention of the IMF in this financial crisis that we have. So basically, this is what it's all about. Then obviously you meet students from all over Europe and America, you socialize, get to know people from that university and this university as well. I mean, you see Exeter, the University of Exeter, you might be interested in studying over there. So
it's a way of really not only studying the subject, which is obviously European studies, but sort of value added, really.
Yes, because we are not only going to have the heads of government, you have ministers, foreign ministers, COREPA, you have journalists, you have the president of the European Council. There's a newspaper coming out every single day after the meetings, interviews going on. So it's a proper simulation. You have students from the Faculty of Economics, International Relations, Communications. So there's a full rounder. Even history students attend.
So it's a real simulation of a meeting between these top echelons of the council.
Exactly.
So how is it structured? I mean, you were a head of
government. For Portugal. Yes, this year we were assigned Portugal. And you have to select a team of four. You have to have a head of government, a foreign minister, an ECOFIN minister, and the corporate representative.
The COREPA, please explain a bit, because these are all acronyms which you are all very familiar with, ECOFIN and all the rest of it.
The COREPA is the Committee for Permanent Representation for the EU.
And ECOFIN is mainly economics and finance, minister of each country.
So these were the ministers that would, in the normal way, be at a meeting.
Yes, exactly.
And talking together.
Exactly.
With the so you have pre-meetings and then the big meetings and then
yes,
meetings with the heads.
Yes, basically you have agendas set for each and every representative, obviously discussing something which is of their competence, example financial issues in the COFIN ministers meeting, issues in the foreign ministry go like some on Hamas, for example, and obviously security issues, and Coreper, they tackle all the other rest of all the other issues.
Before going into these various areas and talking about what you actually do in these meetings, perhaps, Vivian, you can talk a little bit about Exeter itself, because Exeter was happened to be chosen this year. Prior to that, I think it's been in other places.
Yes. Whenever this event happens, it's usually on a year-on-year-off basis, 1 year in America and the next one in Europe. And this year it happened to be in the University of Exeter. We had never been to Exeter, the four of us, so...
Which is in the southwest of
Yes, it's in the southwest of England, yes. And it's 2.5 hours away by train from London and 1 hour away from Bristol. Exeter as a place, it's quite small and it's a city just about around all the university. The campus of the university is really nice. There's a lot of greenery.
Beautiful. It has a lovely park around.
Yes, there are botanical gardens over there because many of the plants were taken in during the Second World War so as to protect them. There are a lot of different facets to the university itself. There are a lot of old buildings. And complemented with them, there are the new buildings. For example, the business one, the business building, and they have the new Arabic and Islamic center. They just built it last year. I forgot the name of the prince who actually funded it, but his son just graduated from the university there, so he gave it as a present to the university.
Nice donation.
And it's really, really nice. It overlooks the Exe River over the valley, so it has a really nice view for all the students.
It's a beautiful cathedral.
Yes, a really lovely cathedral. It was bombed during the Second World War, but it remained quite intact. It's Gothic, late Gothic cathedral, English style. And we met some people who work at the cathedral over there as well. The Ladies Guild, they used to sew the cushions over there with the whole story of what happened in the cathedral. And basically, Exeter is a really, really nice place for those who... love Harry Potter. J.K. Rowling used to study English and humanities there, and she got her inspiration for the movable stairs from the maze at the university itself. Gandhi Street, it was the inspiration for Diagon Alley. So.
Very good, yes. I love Exeter, I must say. It was
really
heavily
nice.
Bombed, as you say, during the war, but it still does retain a certain atmosphere, and the university, of course, is the central theme at in the city. So let's go back a little bit to the nuts and bolts of this council meeting. Who represented who, and how were they chosen? Because you've just said that Malta was representing Portugal, so you couldn't even represent your own country, and there was somebody representing Malta, which must have been very strange.
Weird.
And we'll discuss that as well. What about who chooses what, really? What is the process?
Well,
I think it's by lot, actually.
Yes.
The organizers assign the different countries to the
participants.
So
you don't get to choose?
No. We only get to choose our positions within the team. For example, the four of us, we decided between us which position and which role we wanted to take within...
In fact, let's go around and see who was who. Mela, Jean-Paul.
I was Coreper. I represented Manuel Lobo Antunes.
And what did you have to do prior to going there? You had to find out all about this guy, what his opinions were, I presume.
His political ideology and his biography.
And you had to discuss things that he would normally be discussing
in
the council.
We had to keep in mind what would his position be when deciding about voting and say, you have to keep everything, you know, it's the person representing this man. He has this ideology, and you have to...
So you have to think like him.
Like him, yes.
Not
exactly.
Like Jean-Paul Gaud.
Yes, you have to think, what would Manuel do?
In the situation, wherever,
what would he think? What does he believe about this? And then, you see, you have to keep in mind the country, Portugal, it's...
So you would have to really get to know
this person well before turning up.
And
the country as well. You have to... conduct research about drug policy, what we discussed, drugs and nuclear energy, for instance. So I researched the drug Portugal in relation to drugs and Portugal in relation to its energy policy and how it's developed and everything.
And so a lot of homework before you went.
Especially before the meetings as well, because you have to refresh everything and they tell you the day before, they just tell you tomorrow we'll be discussing this, so you don't really know exactly what will you...
It's a last minute
thing. Yes, it's last minute thing, so...
See, gosh, that's quite terrifying.
Yes, you have to have your research ready. And just
because the temporary agenda can just quite change overnight.
Sometimes staying up to 3 a.m. studying and seeing what
happens. And waking up early in the morning.
6 a.m.
Now that must be very unusual for you, except when you've got an 8 o'clock lecture. Tobias, who were you representing?
I represented the foreign minister, Paulo Portas, a very interesting figure in Portugal, a very polarizing character. And this was quite a challenge to represent him, because Portugal is a quite passive country in foreign affairs. Paulo Portas is an outgoing person. I prepared the different, what Jean-Paul Gatt just said. We did our homework before. We had to, I had to inform myself about the agenda items, about Portugal's position. And then in the actual meetings, you have to be able to speak out in a very concise way, because it's very structured. The debate is very structured, so you can't talk as long as you like. You have to be
They ring the bell at a certain point and say, that's enough.
Yes. 2 minutes, and that's it.
I see. So you have to be very succinct.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But you managed. You feel you managed?
It was a great experience, yes.
Great. And in foreign policy, you say that Portugal doesn't have a very proactive policy. Would they follow Spain? What kind of a policy do they have, actually?
In a way, yes, they do follow Spain, but they also, in general, they are pro-European. That means generalized European foreign policies were supported by Portugal. That was my role as well in the meetings. I could add and I could try to shape the discussion, but I was not against the general conclusion or the general idea.
You couldn't sort of go out on a limb and express a policy which was clearly not a Portuguese, would not be a Portuguese policy.
No, I shouldn't do that. I didn't do that.
And Vivian, who are you, sir? Who are you representing?
The ECOFIN minister, Vitor Gaspar. Basically, what we had to discuss mostly were the Tobin tax, which is the financial transaction tax that they wanted to propose on the European Union. And we had to discuss the Eurobonds as well, and something else with regards roaming, data fees, and etc. in Europe. Mostly, we discussed at length the Tobin tax because certain countries did not agree with it. Like UK, as usual, Ireland, and also sometimes Hungary, but Hungary is not really a part of the Eurozone, so they really didn't have a choice what to say or not. The only problem with us was, like Toby just said, Portugal doesn't really have a stand on anything. So whenever we went in for the meetings, we were like in really choppy waters. We didn't have a compass point to point us anywhere. So either we were following leads from, I don't know, Spain, for example, or Germany, or else just came up impulsively with topics to discuss. But it was mostly like that. I mean, we couldn't have it any other way. We didn't have any Portuguese students over there either.
You were saying before we came on air that you didn't have any Portuguese representative there. There happened not to be a university from Portugal taking part.
We didn't even have any faculty advisors as well. So we had to do everything on our own, basically.
But you all managed, I'm sure, extremely well. So you were mentioning the main issues, the topics of conversation, the drugs, this tax.
Financial crisis.
Yes. And I gather that was, the financial crisis was a difficult discussion. I can just imagine what the debate was like there.
Yes, we discussed in the heads of government meeting. From the start, it proved to be a very tough task for all of us, because you have all of us with different opinions, and you're basically considering the financial problems of the countries, not only of a whole EU's 27 member states, so each and every country was looking at itself. And then you had Greece, you had Portugal, you had Ireland, you had Italy, all coming from big financial problems where they are being bailed out. So they have to step a bit, you know, away from it all. And you can't, my problem was I can't really say anything about Portugal or say, can we change that or can we change that? Because they'll tell you, no, we bailed you out. You have to reach that deficit percentage before you can say anything about or changing something.
You can't really have a voice.
No. So then José Manuel Barroso came up with this proposal of how to at least help these EU countries, for example, Portugal, who are doing well. The deficit was at 5.9% this year. And, for example, next year is expecting to go down to 4%. So at least help them, entice them, give them a reward in a way. And not just, you know, give them...
another downgrading, for example?
Not or more austerity measures.
Because certain measures, exactly. Certain measures.
Austerity measures, and they were actually proposing to have more control from the European Union into those countries with regards to financial spending, government budgets, exactly. And everything else. So.
And what about the main players, or they're perceived as the main players, France and Germany?
Yeah.
Did you find that in the discussions they managed to push the debates in the direction they wanted, even in this context?
We didn't definitely have a France. In my committee, we didn't have a France. So it was between UK and Germany.
Interesting.
Yes, the really Eurosceptics and the pro-Europeans. So,
no, in my meeting, nice. Germany and France had to work together. They, in fact, worked together to come up with a solution. And in our terms, they solved the European crisis, the EU financial crisis.
And is this message going to be sent to the real players?
I'm sure they will send it. I'm very sure.
I think that would be a good idea, really.
Well, there's consensus going on, because that was consensus.
Very good. And so the problems were sorted out through discussion. But first, you had the ministerial meetings, and then they went on up to the level of heads of government, or were you actually discussing as well contemporaneously? How was it structured?
In the beginning, when we had our ministerial meetings, they had to discuss different things, because first they needed our position on things before they could be taken up to Hogs. But it was mostly about the Euro crisis most of the time, because it is the issue nowadays, and it's impossible to find a solution for it.
Everything is connected to the financial crisis, everything. So in the Hogs we were discussing only that. And then, after all meetings and resolutions had been discussed, all issues came up to the heads of government. And we had to see point by point, discuss point by point. Even if there's a word which was can, but it should have been changed to should. Yes, we had to go into those details. So we had to amend and... approved by unanimity, finally.
My goodness, that's a tall order, for sure, definitely.
We also have to say that in some discussions, we didn't come to a conclusion. For example, foreign ministers were talking about a possibility of an EU task force. A quite hot issue, because within the debate, we realized that the definition of the word task force is essential in the debate. If you define task force in different ways, you come to completely different terms, and also there are restrictions within the EU treaties, who ban the possibility of a standing army in the EU. So is a task force a standing army, or is it just some kind of helping troop for a mission, and should it be trained in one country as an EU task force, or does it just consist of different parts, army parts in different countries, and then they work together, as it is now in the NATO or within the NATO? So these were quite long, hot, and interesting debates, and in the end of the day, so basically we discussed the whole day about this issue, and then in the evening we just recognized
agreed
that we
to differ.
Couldn't get to any conclusion, and Yeah, we dropped the issue. And the next day, on the second day, we're talking about the Hamas, which was more fruitful, more positive discussion in a way, because there weren't these definition problems. And it was basically about Hamas, should the Hamas being recognized as a political party, as being part of the problem, but also being part of the solution, or should it recognized or labeled as a terrorist organization? What does it imply in the way we, as the EU, in collaboration, for example, with the US, behave in this situation? And how do we develop the situation in Palestine and Israel? Or should we intervene at all?
And when it went up to heads of government, that discussion about the Palestinian question, how did the heads of government react?
That was the longest discussion.
I can imagine. I thought it might have been.
Because the United Kingdom wanted to define Hamas as a terrorist group. And in order to bring order from this group, they're a political group at the end of the day, you can't just label them a terrorist group. You have to start from there. So the discussion went on. The foreign ministers came in to help us.
Really? So you you were able to invite the foreign ministers in for further discussion?
Because we couldn't come to a conclusion on it, even though they had come to a conclusion, we couldn't. The heads of government didn't have the final say on its own. So then we had to meet for plenary sessions as well to discuss what went on in meetings. We had questions from journalists as well. Why didn't you say that? Or, for example, why did you decide on that? So
we had to, you had sort of press conferences about your discussions?
Yes, twice a day. Yes, because we had meetings from 9 till 12, for example, till 11, something like that. Then we had a plenary session, a meeting, conference, and then we had lunch, then another meeting of another 2 hours and a half, and another plenary session, and then our day ends. So it was quite of an intense simulation. And
at the end of the day, you are European studies students, and you're supposed to get something out of this just for your studies. Jean-Paul, do you feel that at the end of the day, this exercise gave you an insight into the situation in Europe?
It does. It's a hands-on experience. It's just not theory, it's practice. And I think I learned a lot out of it. It's a very good experience. I encourage, if possible, all students to participate in such events, because it's true, you learn things and you just don't forget them after you study them. You will remember forever and say, okay, this works like this, like this, like this, like this. And
yes, I think debate is a very good way of learning, in actual fact. It's an excellent way of getting things to really gel, because when you actually have to articulate your thoughts, actually then it tends to stick. I've always felt that.
Definitely.
What about the American students? Were they representing more than one area or just the one?
Yes, it depended on the amount of students, and universities. For example, from SUNY Newport, they had three different teams at least.
Really?
Yes, representing three different countries. And then they had the press corps as well. So, yeah, and it was interesting to note the American view on the American stand on European issues with regards to the European stand on European issues. For example, it is important to know that Europeans, it's part and parcel of who they are and what they're living. For Americans, they see it, yes, it does affect them globally, like Laura said in the beginning, but at the end of the day, they still see it at a distance. For example, we were discussing this before, a particular American guy who was representing Ireland, he was always talking about America and comparing Ireland to America and the Americanization of the euro, converting it into an Irish dollar and whatever. And it was interesting to note his stance on things compared to ours. At the end of the day, the US is a federal state, something which Europe isn't for now, because I think we're heading in that direction, but still open for debate. But still, I mean,
do you think that the American students who participated, do you think that they actually learned something about Europe through this?
They're actually really prepared. They came actually really prepared. I know we had language students, we had economics students,
history,
and they know the European history inside out. They know European integration, European economics, they know everything.
Treaties,
articles, they knew everything, literally. And
but
it's different for us because we don't have that much insight. Actually, we don't have any insight at all into American politics.
Not
we just
much,
we just compare them like marginally when we're discussing us.
But they do have a faculty for European studies back in the States, for example. The University State of Buffalo have this faculty set up, and their faculty advisors and professors are quite keen on Europe, and they're very knowledgeable about it. So I'm sure that they prepare them very well to discuss all these issues.
But it's also about being used to debate.
Yes, that's it.
Yes.
This is, they tended to be more used to debate at the university, so as part of the course, being able to discuss and being able to experience how debate works, and that you have to be prepared, that you have to clarify your argument, and then what you actually said, it sticks, you remember it, and you learn it in a way, sometimes better than just in theory from a book.
Yes.
But that's debatable.
Even that is debatable.
On that note,
unfortunately, we run out of time. You wouldn't believe that the time has passed so quickly. I was going to ask you about your social life during the days that you were there, but I'm sure we can all imagine that a very good time was had by all.
On behalf of everyone, Jean-Paul, Vivian and Toby, I would like to thank the American Embassy, in particular Mr. Elijah Waterman, who helped us with the funding, and from the Institute for European Studies, Professor Roderick Parch and Dr. Mark Harwood.
Thank you very, very much, Laura Muscat, Vivian Bayada, Tobias Roth and Jean-Paul Gat.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.
Il program li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġjub li l-kom biex xewqat tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.